God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Is there anyone here today in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. If you could, just raise your hand or wave at the window. We would like to recognize you. All right, I'm going to assume that there are people here in their first 30 days anyway. Let's see. So, BJ, would you read the preamble?
My name's BJ. I'm an alcoholic.
And hi, BJ.
Hi. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Thanks.
Thank you, BJ. Okay, this is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. The format is it is a speaker meeting and then an ask it basket. So tonight we are very excited to welcome Sharon C. from, I believe, the Pacific Group, Los Angeles, California, for sure. And after Sharon tells her story, we're going to take a we'll take a short break. We'll do the seventh tradition. Take a few announcements and give Sharon a break, and then you guys can send your questions to the user question, and then we'll reconvene and ask Sharon some questions. So I won't take up another minute of her time. She is unmuted. Welcome, Sharon. Thank you for coming to share with us tonight.
Oh, thank you, David. Good to see everybody. My name is Sharon. I'm an alcoholic, and I just want to start this out because my friend James, who's here with us, sent me this today. He sends me something every day that is Alcoholics Anonymous and always reminds me of the miracle that we have here of having this amazing program. 85 years. Amazing. This is from Pass It On. No, this is from Comes of Age. It Comes of Age. And it was when Bill met Bob all those years ago, 1935, Mother's Day. So I thought it was appropriate. Next afternoon at 5 o'clock, Mother's Day, 1935, that wonderful couple, Dr. Bob and Ann, stood at Henrietta's open door. This was the man who was to be my partner and founder of Akron's Group Number One. With the remarkable Sister Ignatia, he was to care for 5,000 cases of alcoholism in the time when AA was built, was still very young. This was the wonderful friend with whom I was never to have a hard word. This was Dr. Bob's AA co-founder to be. And that's from AA Comes of Age, page 67. Thank you, James, for sending that. Oh, I think about what we're sitting in, you know, this whole new world we're living in. And not to have a harsh word with anybody. How's everybody doing with that? I'm wearing my Sandy Beach little rubber bracelet that says, be the least disturbed person in the room. So when I am, and just with my dog and my cat, I am pretty much the least disturbed person in the room. But, you know, we have to go out and buy groceries and do some things like that. So with masks, you can't smile. You can't smile at people. And I like to smile at people. So, you know, you have to maybe say something or wave or, you know, it's different. I like to see people smile. So, but I did get carded to go for the senior hour. So I love that. That was great. Made me really, really happy. I haven't been carded in a long time. So that was kind of fun. So, you know, you got to look for the little silver linings. And there's, you know, we've all had it. We've all know people. I know I'm sitting here with God in my house. And I know you're sitting there with God in your chair in your home with you. So that lets me know we have connection. So I'm kind of getting used to the, you know, Hollywood Squares, but I like to see you know, faces and reactions, because it makes me feel like I'm in the room with you. And also, like, if you forget people's names, there it is. It's kind of nice. Oh, gosh. Okay. I said an interesting start to my day. I wake up every morning saying God's name, God, 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 God. I say that every morning so that I can drive away on all of the vultures that have been thinking all night long, sitting on my bedpost waiting to have a talk with me. So I just try to turn it right away into a God consciousness, good morning. And my dog thinks that's her name, but it's not. But she gets very excited when I do that in the morning. And every time I come sit at the computer now, she's at my feet. She already is waiting for me. She can tell that, you know, the lights are on differently. And so she knows that she's going to be sitting with you. She loves to come sit with all of you. So that's a plus in my household. But I started my day getting a phone call from my brother, and my older sister, who's going to be 72 next month, is suffering from alcoholic dementia. And she is, she's been my protagonist my whole life. She is in the Mensa category of brilliance, had a full ride to an Ivy League school back east, married her very smart, very capable husband, almost 49 years of marriage, and he died of glioblastoma of the brain last October. So after almost 49 years of marriage and living in Pennsylvania, we live where our family lives all far apart. We're just like that. So we get together maybe once a year, maybe twice a year. And I had seen a few little signs. I mean, her husband said, yeah, I'm a heavy drinker. Yeah, and he was functioning. He was a functioner, but I think he was protecting her. So this morning, she's wandering around the neighborhood in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, where there's forests, in her robe looking for food, knocking on people's doors, going in their basement. They're all good people, but you know, there's tons of food. Her neighbor had brought her food. We have somebody that goes by every day. But she came into the one house in the basement. When they came down, she said, is breakfast ready? My whole life, I'm 2 years behind her in school. I had to follow her through school, through everything. The brilliant sister saved me from a fire when I was 6 or 7 years old. My protagonist, really. I never could measure up because of her. And now she's in St. Mary's Hospital, and she's going to a detox. We hope that she's not going to fight it. If so, we have to get guardianship. And we have things in place now for her where to go. We've been working on this because we knew something was wrong, but she had the full break. She had the full break. And so prayers for Nancy. Unbelievable. Unbelievable that my older sister, who was in the All-American Choir, who had a full ride to Barnard College, who made, you know, lots of money, and they sent her to Asia from a big corporation because the Asian men would listen to her because in finance she was so smart, and she was taller than all of them too. So it kind of is very heavy on my heart right now, and I wanted to share that with you because this is just another chapter in my book being written, and the best it could end with her speaking at a meeting somewhere. I don't know. But, you know, there's amazing things that happen. Each one of us sitting here have been blessed with having the chance to hear that there's a way out from the way we had been living. And it's laid out for us. It's a simple set of spiritual tools that we have to work. Every day I have to work them every day in order to stay in my skin and be useful. And you are my God with skin on. Thank you for being here for me today. I came to you honestly. I started drinking when I was 12, and I was a seeker long before that, and I was into Gandhi and into, like a little girl, I was into these things. And I knew that there was more to the world than Iowa, where I grew up. In fact, I thought the mothership was going to come back and get me, but it didn't. So I found some Canadian clubs sitting on a 57 Chevy being handed to me by the bottle. I was 12 years old, and that night, the seeking stopped because I knew where to get the spiritual solution to life. It made sense. My trainer bra woke up. We had a great time that night. I felt competent. It was, alcohol didn't do that for my best friend sitting next to me, but it did it to me. And we were going to start our dance. And, you know, I had a lot of potential, as many of us do. But I'm a runner. And I had to slide across the bar many things in life that were important to me on my quest to have it work one more time. Tell me it's my, you know, my lover, my friend, you don't need anybody else, all of that. That's the way I wanted King Alcohol to be in my life. And it was, and then it wasn't. But I had a slide across the bar, my art talent. My mom and dad had oil paintings hanging in their living room that I had done. And after 2 years of some art college, I ended up in New York City because my dad said he wasn't paying for the party anymore. And, you know, he was right. And we had another verbal argument because I used to like to talk to my dad about things like politics and just everything. And he was still, my fiance that had cheated on me was still working for him. So I was really mad at my dad about that. He had a lot of men working for him. So, and he was, you know, I don't even know all about that, but I was still mad at my dad about that, but I wouldn't admit it because when I caught my fiance with somebody else, my mother said, "Aren't you going to cry?" And I said, no, not going to cry. And I hardened up and alcohol allowed me to do that. So we had one more argument about something and my dad would set his jaw and turn away and we wouldn't look at each other for 18 to 27, 28 years old. We wouldn't look each other in the eye. And my dad had the big shoulders and he was a good man and he loved my mom and he raised four good children. I'm the alcoholic until just recently. I'm it till just recently. Just recently, it just blows my mind because you never know what's lurking there, I guess. So I went to New York City, and I love New York City, and that was my first geographic. And I was legal to drink there, and I worked at an ad agency where we drank a lot and had a lot of parties and a lot of fun. And somewhere along the line, I had to slide across the bar my art talent, which I'm sure if it would have been clear that night and the bartender would have said, "Hey, it's time. You want to go down the path, slide across the bar your art talent." I was to take my art talent. Who cares about that? And I went back to art school. I asked my dad if I could have another shot, and he said, sure. And I couldn't paint. And I just got drunk. I just got drunk and sat in class. I got drunk and laid on the canvas. I got drunk and put paint on me and passed out on the canvas. And I thought I was being creative, and you know, the art professor didn't think so. So who needs any of this? And my dad and I had one more argument, and I went and did my next geographic, and that was to Aspen, Colorado, where I had a slide across the bar my dignity at some point in that town. And that's where I met Bob Dylan, came to California for the first time. But yeah, I don't know if it was Bob or not. You don't ask Bob Dylan to see his license. You just don't do it. But we drove from the restaurant he came in. I knew it was him, and I made two chocolate milkshakes to go, and he wanted one, and I got in the car with him and came to California for the first time. And I got kicked out of my first commune for being a drinker. You know, these are people living on the edge, and I'm a drinker, but they were boring. All they did was, like, you know, drool on themselves and take other drugs and stuff that I didn't like. And they took me to Mount Baldy and said, you know, "We're going on a picnic, bring your things." I should have known bring your things meant something. And so they left me in Mount Baldy, and I hitchhiked back to Colorado, hitchhiked back home. And my mother said, "You can stay here, but please stay out of your dad's way. You break his heart." All right, it's time to start sliding her. Oh, Maddie, it's okay. It's okay. It's my girl. It'd be hard to yell at God if God was protecting me barking, so I yell at Maddie. That's her name. Just a segue, sorry. So my dad, I ended up at home and didn't stay out of my dad's way. My dad stayed out of my way, and he wouldn't sit down at the table if I was at the table. I wouldn't sit down at the table if he was at the table. Somebody, we went riding the same car together to grandma's house. At grandma's house that Thanksgiving, they sat me with all the children out in the card tables. And I had made the big table, but now looks like I don't belong to this family much anymore. And that was starting to happen. I had to slide across the bar, the love of my family, many times until it finally I knew I didn't belong with them anymore or to them anymore. And I had a blown pancreas. I had a terrible gallbladder. I was very sick. I ended up at an organic farm in northern Wisconsin where it was a lot of work. We heated with wood. So, you know, it's northern. You got a buzzsaw, chop, split. You want tea, you better split some wood. We had a wood stove. And there were like, I don't know, 8 farms of organic. We bought 85 acres. This guy said, let me take care of you. I had gone to high school with him and he didn't take care of me. We just worked. It was like, what? But I was so sick, they took me to the hospital and the doctor or whoever he was, maybe it was the surgeon, after he, you know, had to take out my gallbladder, sew me up, all kinds of things were happening. He said, you shouldn't look like this. You know, you're 20, 21 years old. What's wrong with you? And I said, I'm organic, because I was. But then the worm turned because I started to feel better and I could drink heavier and I wasn't just drinking that organic wine. I wanted my hard stuff. And they started to look at me like, hey, something's wrong with you. Why do you have to act that way? And they had hootenannies, which were so boring. They were so boring. And they sat me in the corner so I would behave and play the spoons. That was my job, playing the spoons. But I would get drunk and tell them what I thought of them. And then they would just like turn away from me. And eventually that spring, I had some Maui Waui seed and I made it a nice patch. I had a beautiful garden growing. And that was my way out of town. They left and did primal therapy. I got drunk and screamed at the sheep. And I took care of my garden way out in the woods. That sheep dung makes a short growing season look good. And it looked good. So I knew winter was coming. I'm alone. I went to harvest it and I left the harvest, which was my way out of town, back in hefty bags in the kitchen floor because I was drunk driving the new town I was going to turn this thing into money. And so I made a good decision. I got to get out of town. I don't know how I'm going to get out of town. I turned around. There was a carnival, and my head said I always wanted to be a gypsy. So I joined. I joined that night. And so, you know, that's a day. My mother thinks I'm marrying this guy with 85 acres of land. And now I'm in Arkansas calling her that I have joined the carnival. And she's crying. That's a day you don't want. Happy Mom's Day. Oh, my God, my mother. So, my mother has slept at night because of you. Because of you. I am overpaid that my mother slept at night. God bless her. After I got to you, there were many nights, many times, my mother couldn't sleep at night worrying about her daughter. Where is she? What's happening? Is she okay? And yeah, you know, she's got 4 children and I was the one that kept her up. But eventually the carnival didn't work out very well because I got us closed down because I'm an angry tequila drinker and I have a can of mace in my boot. And I don't care if you think you're going to win teddy bears tonight. Sorry, you're not. You think you knocked all those targets down? Nope, no, you didn't. And then a fight would ensue, and then we'd get closed down because I'd have to bring out my mace. And I was just trying to fit in, really, I was. But 2 stops later, Mr. Matt Armstrong, who owned the show, said, we got to get rid of that little Wisconsin girl. She's trouble. And Washington Paris in Louisiana, finest, came in that morning, broke open the door when I cracked it. At, I don't know, early, and they found everything they needed to find, all my bartering, and they took me off to Bogalusa, Louisiana jail, and the carnival never came back. They were glad to get rid of me. I was so hurt, I didn't understand, and I was having DTs. Now, that's not good in jail. That's not good, and I'm telling you this because my dad saw me in this situation. My dad saw a daughter. They came in when they cuffed me and took me in. I was crazy and I hadn't washed because they watch people wash. It was just, I couldn't believe I was in there. And I cut myself all over with a piece of glass, tiny cuts, just little bloody scabs all over me. So they'd leave me alone. And you know what? They did. And they came and cuffed me, threw me in a car, drove me to somewhere, threw me in this office, and there sat my dad on my left. He had to get on a plane in Iowa, find his daughter, rent a car, bring his checkbook, try to get her out of his jam in a backwoods southern jail. It wasn't very nice. They didn't treat me very nice. My dad hired the lawyer, the bail bondsman. They had a judge right there, and he thought it was done and they were going to let me out, but they didn't. And I hope I always remember how I felt the day I walked in there, thrown in, handcuffed behind me, sitting on the floor looking to my left, because I just slid down to the floor when I saw my dad. I couldn't believe he was there. And we didn't go eye to eye, and I didn't say, how's mom? How are my sisters? How's my brother? How's the dog? I didn't say anything. My dad told me 20 years later when we talked about that, 20 years sober, I was 20 years sober, and my dad and I talked about it, and he said, all you said was you weren't guilty and it wasn't your fault. Because I'm turning into a perfect little victim. If there's no guilt, you can just keep doing what you want. I had a backpack in my backpack. I always carried a book called Be Here Now by Baba Ram Dass. And Be Here Now like turned into, hey, I'm going to do what I want when I want right now. Because that's where my alcoholism took that spiritual quest. And they let me out finally, and I found the French Quarter in New Orleans, and that's where I drank and used and had blackouts and came to in Florida and went to Missouri. And, you know, but I drank with a lot of you. You're my kind of darkness drinkers. And two of my girls that I call them my girls because I got sober before they did, about 8 years before they did. Two of them, I got them to admit 3 weeks ago on a meeting. We were all in the same room, Robin, Denny, and me. And I got sober in 75, and they got sober in, I think it was 83 and 84. And I got to go back to the International Convention in 1980 in New Orleans, almost 5 years sober and 12-step them. And they didn't recognize me. One was my roommate. They didn't recognize me. So what happened was in that meeting we were at 3 weeks ago, they finally admitted, and I knew it, but they would never admit it, but they finally admitted that I was hitting bottom before they were. And that if they ever got as bad as Cher, which was, that was my name, S-H-A-R-E, that they might think about their drinking. So I got that, I knew it, and they just would never admit it because I was working at a seedy little stinky bar way down in Lower Decatur Street where they didn't even want to come have a drink with me. And I got fired for having a bad attitude, and I didn't work until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous after that. And I met some people that were, after the tragedy, my friend got killed on Mardi Gras Day. I ended up in New York. From New York, I came west. I ended up in Barney's Beanery where they closed the bar at 2. I couldn't believe it. I'm used to a 24/7 town. I mean, a calamity back then was, oh my God, it's 10 minutes to 5. The light company's across Canal Street. I've got to pay my light bill. And I had the money in my hand, but we'd been drinking. So everybody was like, oh my God, go, go, go. And I poured my drink into a go cup because you can down there. And I'm in the cab and I'm going, I just make it in. I pay my light bill. I come back out. You know, I got my drink, make it back to the bar. Ah, it was serenity because I made it. I mean, that was like the big thing, you know? And I think about that's, I love the bars. Everything got dealt with. Everything got handled. Everything was fantasy in the bars with the music and the people and the lawyers and the astronauts and the politicians and anything you wanted to be in the bar. That's what I was. I was the artist. I drew on little paper napkins. That's what I did. But I love the bars because, you know, it was where my people were. And I ended up at Barney's Beanery, but this girl was drunk. And she had a big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know what a big book was, but I saw this book called Alcoholics Anonymous under her drunken arm going to an A&A meeting right out of the bar. So I picked up my glass and everybody else did. And we gave her a toast. Good for you, Chris. You just go to A&A. You know, we toasted her out the door. Well, that was in April of 75. I had a ways to go yet. I am in a red dashiki, a Panama hat. I am homeless. I have my backpack. I don't have a dog or a cat or any other companion in my life anymore. I couldn't get a job. They asked me to leave after 10 minutes. I couldn't remember where the drinks went. I slept off Sweetser because there was an apartment that had a door that was open that wasn't locked, and I could sleep in that hallway sometimes. Or I had some friends that were real alcoholics, and they lived in a garage. And so if there was a free cot for me, I'd sleep in the garage. And there was always a gallon of vodka in the freezer, and that's how we survived the night. I'd hear somebody get up and go, and then I would get up and go, and we would take turns on that gallon of vodka all night long. And my mother didn't know where her daughter was. My mother would send me a Valentine present in the French Quarter for a couple of years because she knew it would get to the bar, that would get to the bar, that would get to me. And then I would call home. And I remember the last one I got, it was a pretty little sweater, and so I called home. I'm not hurting anyone but me, leave me alone. What a lie. What a lie, self-centered, delusional lie we tell ourselves. Just stand back and watch me die. And that's what my parents had to do. And they had no idea of alcoholism. Well, I ended up going to Palm Springs to party, and it was in July, it was hot, and the biker guys didn't want to hang out with me and my girlfriend anymore, my girlfriend from the bar. And so we ended up at a club, and I guess she left me in a car with these people that she didn't know and got out because they were being not so nice to her, and she left me in the car. I was passed out, and I came to in some apartment somewhere being victimized, and my jaw broken in three places and my nose and concussion, and they were slight young guys, and they just drug me around. You know, I had a lot of scars. I was 180 pounds now. I was bloated and toxic and sick. And they rolled me off the side of the road July 27th, 1975. And my mother, I said, I heard a voice, and the voice said, get up, I want to live. And that's when I got up. And I guess I found a lawn chair, and a gardener found me and called the police, and I woke up on a gurney writing my name because I had no ID. I had to write who I was. I couldn't talk, and they're prepping me to put this jaw back up. And I saw the word victim. If I could have smiled at that moment, I would have gone, yes. I was shooting for victim. And somebody called my mother, and for two nights didn't tell her what hospital I was in. So for two nights, my mother and I, when my sister in New York called and called and called and found out I was going to be okay. And I was in that hospital for 2 weeks. And when I got out, I had nowhere to go. And this guy that I had met at Barney's Beanery in West Hollywood said, I know you have nowhere to go, and I'll let you sleep on my couch. And I had a detective, and it was going to all, they caught these guys. It was going to be this court thing. And I'm wired. I'm like, I've got inner wires and outer wires holding me together here. And I'm bruised and broken and tired. And he would buy me cheap red wine and go off to work. And I would suck on that cheap red wine through a straw through the place where the tooth had been kicked out. And there was no more spiritual seeking in alcohol. Alcohol wasn't even my friend. It was like nothing. I was done, and I didn't even know it. And that's the grace I got. I had that grace to see that whatever I was doing wasn't absolutely not working. And the August 20th, 1975, he said, you have to leave, you're depressing me. I was like, oh my God, I have nowhere to go. So I called my mom, collect, and mom said, Sharon, I can't help you anymore. Go to the Salvation Army. Seconds and inches, Norm Alpe used to talk about. Seconds and inches that we're all here. $20, you'd have another speaker. And I looked down, and it just happened to be the girl he was dating was the girl in the bar in April with the big book. This is all just little breadcrumbs being set up for me to have a beautiful moment of grace that I'm actually going to grab without knowing it because I'm so tired and done. It was my bottom, and it was perfect timing. God has perfect timing. And I called that number, and she couldn't help me that day because she was drinking, and she had me call a stranger. I can't talk. I didn't have any movement in my face. So the woman I called knew the liquor store I was living above, knew the liquor store. Thank God. She was 5 years sober, but she knew that liquor store, and she figured out where I was. She said, put your drink down, put your joint down, and go sit on the steps because somebody's going to come get you. I thought, how does she know I'm working both here, and how does she know about the steps? And so I went and sat on those steps, and this car pulled up. I'm just looking for a place to stay. That's it. And it was a bright yellow Volkswagen with two beautiful, shiny California girls getting out, and I hated them immediately. But I was too tired. And they just lifted me up, and they put me in the back seat of a Volkswagen where you can't get out. I'm detoxing. I'm unwashed. I tell you, that was love because, you know, there's no air going back there. And it seemed to me at every red light, they would turn around and talk about themselves. And I just had a newspaper clipping in my pocket in case somebody said, "What happened to you?" Nobody asked. I just thought, "Oh my God, you look like you're new." And I think, how do they know? You could smell me, and it wasn't Tiffany, that's for sure. So I end up at a church, and we go up there, and I'm sitting there, and I'm just thinking, okay, I had a fight with God back when I was 18. No more, God. I know you're there, but no more. And I thought, well, now they're going to have to, they'll want something from me, and I'm going to have to leave because I'm not giving anything here. And the man who was giving an AA talk, me not realizing where I was yet, hooked me with these words. He said he always waited for the spaceship to land and say, "You can come home now, Bill." I lifted my chin up and looked at all of you, and you look like spaceship people to me. And I thought, okay, I can be with spaceship people. This might work. And at the end of the meeting, a man came up to me with Alcoholics Anonymous, the second edition, big book. And I went, oh, is this where I am? But I can't talk the first 3 months in AA. Cannot talk. It's a blessing. I had to learn to listen. It was so perfect for me. People talk to you if you can't talk. People tell you things if you can't talk. I mean, I was like, people are telling me the inventory. I was like, I don't want to know. You know, they think I'm never going to talk again or something. I don't know. Like, this one's going to leave, so don't worry. But there I was, and I wrote my name. Oh, he wrote my name. He got my name out of me so he could write it in pencil. He wrote my name in pencil, the date in pencil, and where I was in pencil. And I still have that sobriety date to this day in pencil. And my life with you started, and all I remember in the beginning were your kindnesses. That's all I remember. I mean, it was later that I remember hearing Chuck C and having everything he said go right over my head. Oh, you got to hear Chuck C. You got to hear Chuck C. And he was talking around a lot and over my head. But the feeling in the room was something that I couldn't quite understand. I felt safe, I guess. I felt loved, I guess, because there was just an aura about him in the room that brought out the best in people. And you know, I got to know him a little bit later, but I was like, I just remember the feeling in the room. I just remember this lady, Pat, who would give me rides. I was sleeping on floors. I finally got a sponsor, and I went and moved up to a couch. You get a sponsor, your life gets better, newcomer. It does. Totally gets better. I went from a floor to a couch. And, you know, she was taking me home one more time to somebody's floor, one more time with this borrowed sleeping bag. And she said, you know, talking to somebody and complaining about their sponsors. You know, fellowshipping at a coffee shop is hard when you can't eat. So I'm trying to drink coffee and it's rolling out of my face. I had no feeling for a long time, this side of my face. And I didn't realize it was drooling out of onto the table. And this was a sacred moment for me of the kindness that kept me here. Because this lady used to be in the CIA. People talked about her. She was kind of scary. She'd give me a ride home and I'd just sit there. I wouldn't even move. But she's going to take me home tonight. And so I'm sitting there drinking coffee and she's talking to somebody complaining about their sponsor. And she looks over at me and she sees what had happened. She sees that it's dribbling and drooling and making a puddle on the table. And I had just realized it too. And I was mortified. And she looked at me with these big eyes. And I know she was going to throw up her hands and say, "You know, this little pig from Iowa, would somebody please take her home? I'm tired of her. Look at her. Look at her. She's a mess." But she didn't. She took a napkin and put it in the corner of my face. And then she put it on the puddle on the table and she went back to her conversation. But before she started her conversation, Pat gave me a wink. And the wink said, "You're going to be okay, kid." You know, those little sacred moments were the kindnesses that I remember. And there were many of those. You know, I started my steps with my sponsor, and yeah, I remember my very first third step, taking it with her, and I still couldn't talk then. And we were like, it was daylight, we're on our knees, and I'm going, "Oh man, I don't want to," you know, because she had given me a little prayer. If you're going to stay here, you have to say this little prayer on your knees at night. And so I knew she was watching somehow. 2 a.m, I'd wait for the house to be quiet, and I'd wait for God to be asleep. And then I would slide out and get on my knees and take that little piece of paper out from under the pillow and say, "Thank you for all you've given me. Thank you for all you've taken away from me. Thank you for all you've left me in my broken jawway, whispering. And then I would put it under the pillow and I would slide back in. Good. No, God didn't know he's sleeping. Good. So that was a beginning for me. And we did this third step and she was so excited. I just thought, what is this about, really? You know, I don't talk yet, so everybody's happy with me. Just do this. But she started to hug me really too long. And I'm thinking, it's too long, I'm going to hit her. And what I did was I just kind of stiffened up. And she just kept hugging me. And then all of a sudden, there was a feeling of, I think I took a breath. I exhaled or something, and my shoulders went down. And I kind of just let her fall into me. But the way I think, this is the way I think, because I'm a broken computer. I have a broken brain. And when things start to spark and get put back together, we don't know if it's the right spark sometimes. That's why you need sponsors with perception to help you out. Because between you and the sparks, they're like, there's air, they can look. But I'm sparking up there with just anything that'll spark in my life. And she's, I just felt really good in her arms. And what I said to her in my broken jaw way was, I think I'm gay. I think I love you. And she said, well, let's don't make any major decisions in your first year. She was really good for me. So I went and did a waitress job. A man named Hank Johnson, they said I couldn't drive this car. I got this car with loud pipes and a seat that was, it was a primer gray Malibu. It was very cool. I bought it from one of the other waitresses and I could lay back because the seat was broken and I could roll up to the meeting with the pipes and low riding on in. And she saw me one and she said, what's with that seat? I said, well, it's broken. And so she got an old chair and put it up there and made me sit straight up. And she said, by the way, do you have insurance on that? I said, "What? No. Why do I need insurance? It's an old car. Well, this is what Clancy tells everybody. We want you to have insurance because we want to be safe from people like you, you know? And so it's like, ugh. So she took away the keys. So I quickly started saving my waitress money, and a man named Hank Johnson came all the way to my little $24 a week room. He was a big insurance guy, and he was an old timer in our group, and he used to tell a great story if anybody ever heard Hank Johnson. He was so funny. And so he came to my little door, and I had a Mr. Coffee. I didn't even have a table. We wrote out the policy on his knees. I gave him my first payment. He shook my hand and said, welcome to being a citizen. Those kind of moments of you taking the extra step opened my heart, made me want to stay with you, made me understand you, and then listening to you. A lot of speaker meetings in Southern California, a lot of things, and I started to identify a lot. And then I met Boy Meets Girl at campus, so if you want to know your defects of character, you get in a relationship early, and yeah. I learned a lot about his defects. We had to get down to mine. But yeah, so, we started going to all kinds of AA together. I remember the gas crunch back when we were being asked to go speak on panels everywhere, Santa Barbara, San Diego, and call the Pacific Group because they'll show up. And we went, I just saw this guy a couple of weeks ago. He was at this fellowship hall in Santa Barbara. And I remember he was a greeter and we came up there on no gas, because they're supposed to have a gas can. That's supposed to be their commitment. And he said, oh my God, the guy with the gas can didn't show up tonight. So we're thinking, okay, we're going to have to sleep here somewhere till the gas stations open up. And right across the street, one opened up right then. And we had the right number on our plate, even or odd, whatever it was. So it always worked out okay. So, you know, this calamity serenity thing that we've got going now, I mean, everything always seemed to work out. If you make a list today, like I would make a list today of all the things that I'm worried about or have, you know, I'm kvetching about or I haven't done yet or how am I going to deal with that and put it in my book for about 6 months from now, I guarantee God's fingers are all over that already. I just have to take the proper actions. And that's where, you know, I can't let fear creep in, because if fear creeps in, then it's a block between me and my life. I need to stay in spiritual awakeness in order to be comfortable sober now. Doesn't mean I always do it. at all. But that is the promise in the 12th step, is having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, which I've had. I had it, little ones, big ones. At 7 years, I had a pretty big one. And it was like, oh, I want more of this. It felt really good. I didn't realize it wasn't about me, which was the whole event wasn't about me. And I felt amazing in it. I felt like one of God's kids with other God's kids. And that was kind of the beginning. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about my amends, because my family was obviously the first. Dad was obviously the first on the list. I had a very hard time finishing my fourth step, but I finally did. And did my fifth and had my first year birthday. And my sponsor said, okay, you're going to go home and you're going to start making those amends with your family. And I went home, and Mom and I had a great time together. And I was there 10 days. And we're getting ready to go back to the airport and putting the bags in the car. And I hadn't talked to my dad yet. It was tense. It was tense between me and Dad. We weren't looking at each other yet. He didn't really know what I was in. My brother said when I would call home at the holidays and they were at Grandma's house, and my mother would get off the phone with me, and everybody would say to her, how's Sharon doing? And she would say very quietly, she's an AA. Because it's anonymous. They really didn't know much about it. I was their example, period. And I met, you know, my sponsor said, you might be the only example ever. So we had talked about what I was going to say to my dad. And I said, can I talk to your dad? It was like the last minute. I was intimidated by that sponsor. She would have sent me back on the plane. And he said, okay. And we leaned on the car, and it was September. It was Indian summer warm. It was beautiful. And the warmth on my back and the warmth on his back, that's what we were feeling. Nobody was looking. I said what I had to say. And the sky didn't shake and the earth didn't move. And my dad just said very quietly to me, well, I just always wanted you to be happy. And so we got in the car, I came back, and she said, well, how'd it go? And I told him, she said, well, that's a good start. When you call home, you're happy. When you're with your dad, you're happy. Good start. You know, it says in 9 times out of 10, the unexpected happens. Like, in a, you know, those are the odds of making amends. Those are pretty good odds of making amends. And it also says, remember at the beginning, we agreed that we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. And I just thought when she pointed that out, it was like, ah, did I? That's that old step one thing, you know, that's that old step one. It's like 100%, yeah, 100% in. And okay. And I can't do it without God. I can't do it without a power. I cannot do anything without a power. Of myself, I am nothing. I pray all day long and use words if necessary, because my actions are my prayers. My actions are my prayers. And at 2 years, 2.5, my dad came to walk me down the aisle at an AA wedding in Los Angeles. And it was a great day, and somebody took a picture, and we were eye to eye. And so I have another sponsor, and when I called her, she said, you know, it's time that you make amends to your dad financially. You have a better job now. Oh, okay. Call him and ask him how much. Well, my dad came to a meeting when he came out to Los Angeles. You guys took him to the literature table. Thank you very much. And he read the big book, and he knew most alcoholics owe money. So he got out my dossier, because my brother saw it on his office desk. He said, Sharon, it was quite thick. He said, I didn't look at it, but it was quite thick. So my dad had run a calculator tape and put it in the big book where he had it by his chair, where he has books stacked, because my dad is a reader. And I didn't know this until my dad was gone. But my mother said it was circled in red, the total. And told my mother, look, if she stays sober long enough and gets to this part of the book and I'm not home and she asks, here it is. But he was home when I asked. And I thought, I got off the phone quickly, called my sponsor. I said, oh my God, it's this much. It's way too high. And she laughed and she said, well, what can you afford? Call him back and see if he'll accept your terms, your payment terms. So I called him and he answered the phone because he was there, and he did. So I called her back and I said, he accepted. And she said, good. Don't be late with that check then. You may be the only example that your dad ever sees of Alcoholics Anonymous. And besides, Bill and Bob are watching. It's like, what? Ah, that check was never late because Bill and Bob are watching. Sponsors, louder than your head. I think they go to sponsor school. I'm still looking, you know, somewhere along the line. They get these little tips that I guess you got to learn by being sponsored. And so I called my dad back, accepted. I talked to her. She said, fine, don't be late. And are you willing to grow through this with your dad? She said. Now, she could have said, are you willing to have forgiveness? I always said, not possible. Are you willing to maybe let redemption into this person, just, you know, person's life? No, I don't think so. But she said a very odd thing. Are you willing to grow through this with your dad? So I just said yes. And what she meant was, put it with that check, put a note about your life. So tell your dad about your life, not the Mensa and the Nurse Sally in Alaska, not the brother with a doctorate, Sharon's life. And it was very hard to do. It was very hard to share with him. But he got something. He got a note. He got the check on time. He got a note. And I remember I had written a whole letter without thinking about it because there were turtles at the bottom of this small stationery, not a big piece, a small piece. And there were turtles along the bottom. And I had written a whole page without thinking about what I was saying to my dad because I ran into the turtles. And I thought, wow, something's changing. I went home a lot, at least once, maybe twice a year. In 1984, I had this baby boy. It was just about four years and nine months of my father getting the check and the note, the check and the note, the check and the note. He called me after Christmas, day after Christmas, and he said, Merry Christmas, Sharon. I don't want your money anymore. It's done, free and clear. And, you know, I knew I wasn't done, but he said, you're done, free and clear. And I was like, whoa, yeah. But he added the words because of that sponsor that said, are you willing to grow through this with your dad or maybe put those notes in? But he said to me, Sharon, don't stop sending me your notes. And somewhere along the line, when I was home in Iowa, going in to Cedar Rapids from into town to get some parts for one of his big pieces of machinery, he had a construction business. We were driving by a root beer stand and my dad said, hey, do you want a root beer? And I said, yeah, it's hot. That'd be really great. So we'd pull up to the root beer stand and I got my root beer and I started going back to the car. And he said, no, let's go sit on that picnic table's under a shade tree. Let's go over there. So we went over there and we sat down and it was just a father and a daughter sharing a root beer under a shade tree on a hot day. And if you would have been a squirrel or an ant or anything down in the grass, you would have seen my six-year-old legs swinging like a little girl. I felt like I was a little girl. And the innocence was back. The redemption was there. The forgiveness. I gave him that forgiveness to do with what he wanted, and he forgave me back. Because I was a grown-up with consistency, with perseverance, with love, with kindness, and my word was good with my dad. So much so that at 10 years of sobriety, my sponsor got off the plane with 21 days, smoking pot in Paris. I had to have Clancy be my sponsor. He was the only one I was going to listen to at that time because I'm planning my escape. I have a year and a half old child. My husband picked the newcomer in the room. They're together. You all knew. I hated all of you. I was now a victim again. And I was pissed off. I sat in the front row with my legs folded out, my Madonna, white, spiky hair. And I think I met Mary kind of at that time then too. And I had a bad attitude because you all betrayed me, but I'm here. I didn't leave. And I just watched me suffer. But the one night that I was going to throw hot coffee in him, my sponsor Clancy happened to be there and he took the hot coffee. He knew where I was going. He saw me. I was determined. I had determination in my eyes. And he took the hot coffee out of my hands. He says, Sharon, to walk through this with dignity and grace. And I would have stopped him there if he would have stopped. And I would have said, I want revenge. I don't care about my dignity or my grace. But he added the words like they do. So you can be an example to others. Oh, I heard him. I heard him. It pierced me. So I gave up the spare keys to my ex-husband's car. I was going to drive it at low tide. I had it all figured out at the Venice Beach where it goes low and then it gets high. And his car would have gone bye-bye. So I told him myself, he says, time you did another inventory. So I had to give up a lot of my plans. I had to sit. One night I was in such pain. My son had, they call him, I don't know, it's a sleep thing where they cry and they don't know they're awake. He was just feeling it all, I think. So I'd be rocking him and he'd be screaming, crying, and I'd be trying to just, and I'd be crying. And I finally get him to sleep, and then I would sit with my grandmother's quilt on the heater, just right. And we went, and he went to speak in Pasadena, and we went, I did my inventory, and we talked about it, and I looked at some of my wrongs, which was so hard to do, because I was felt so betrayed. But I started to let go of that slowly, and let God back into my life, because I'm raising this child. I'm raising this child. He's got a baby and another wife, and they're in the rooms, and I'll tell you, it was hard. And my sponsor said, you bite your tongue, and you don't say anything about her to him. Because he would say, oh, Jill did this, and Jill did that. Well, when he left her, because sometimes how they come is how they go, she told me, I knew I could do it because I had watched you. So it doesn't. I don't get to judge who gets my example. Yeah, she would have been the only one in the room. I would have said, not you. Everybody but you. And she texted me earlier, we're going to have a little virtual Mother's Day in a little bit. We always do Mother's Day together with our boys. We went to Europe last year, 2 years ago, and my son hasn't asked. He's 35. He's not an alcoholic. He went through something pretty hard a couple years ago, and he took himself to therapy. What? It's like, what? But, yeah, he asked to listen to a CD of mine or a tape. So one of my babies downloaded him one. He was working in Paris, so he wanted to listen to it. So, and he said to me, have her make it a good one. I was like, oh my God, I don't even know, please. So I didn't know why I wanted it, but he was dating a girl who had some ACA issues, I guess. I don't know. But he said to me when he got back and we were having coffee and catching up, he said, Mother, I didn't know you went through all of that with Jill. He's 33 years old when he's listening to my talk. And from a year and a half old, all the way through his life, he didn't know how I felt about her because I bit my tongue. And he got to make his own opinion about her when he was young. And he loves her. And he loves his brother, his half-brother. So I was just moved again by sponsorship and just their foresight, their perceptions, their what they can just kind of, you know, you call them when you're complaining about your husband or your boyfriend and they have you make amends to your father. It's like it baffles me. But that's the beauty of intuitive thought. That's the beauty of working with others. That's the beauty of things that just fall out of my mouth that aren't me. You know, I heard it or it came out, I didn't plan it, and it's the perfect thing to say. It was the perfect thing to come out. It's just, you know, my dad was killed in 99 and AA was in my mother's kitchen. And it was very tragic and it was very sad and it was very quick and it was very unexpected. And I was good. I got to write him one more note and put my chip in there before they closed the coffin. And then my mother's so brave. She moved from all her family, everything she knew her whole life up to Madison, Wisconsin with my brother. And she lived out her days there. And my mother slept at night. You know, they say if an alcoholic is new, 10 people's lives are immediately changed the minute we walk in and sit down. 10 people. Maybe they don't even talk to you, but they've been praying about you and worried for you and wanting the best for you and not knowing what to do. And they hear you come and sit with us and they can exhale and go to the movies and not worry about you coming when they're gone to steal something or the car. 10 people's lives. And right in the beginning of us coming here together, it's a we admitted, it's we, the first word, is that it's about we here. It's not about me. It's not about, in the very beginning, it wasn't about me, but it takes a long time for me to get there. And you know, I 1 year, 1 month, and 14 days later, I met my Casey, who was 5 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd watched him come and go, come and go, come and go, and we just hit it off. And my sponsor walked me through the beginnings of that relationship, go slow, you know, it was like, and my son was going to this Catholic school, and I had this nun I sponsor, which I still sponsor her. I know it's a stretch. You heard my story, right? But Sister Sheila was there for so much of my life, and he ended up at her school, got kicked out of kindergarten in another school. I thought, oh God, what's happening here? But he liked the uniforms, you know, and he liked the structure. And But Sister Sheila, God bless her, she would have me come and sit just, we're going to go have dinner. Come sit at the end of Mass. I'll see you in the back of the room. And I would go sit in the back, and they're talking about peace and love. And I was like, when did they start talking about peace and love? And you know what? I can go anywhere with my God today. My God is tucked in my heart, tucked in my broken open heart, which heals bigger every time it gets broken open, every single time. And I had another little epiphany the other day with love, because that's my God, is love, kindness and love. That everlasting love is something I'll never make. That's something for the other side. Maybe the big meeting in the sky will hand it to me when I walk in. I don't know. So my higher power is so much bigger than love, which is the greatest of all the charities, right? But everlasting love is something that I can once in a while touch the veil of. Once in a while, I can see the ripple hit the shore. And I got to tell you, my dad 12-stepped the town drunk. I didn't know this. My mother told me this much later. In Mount Vernon, Iowa, we had a town drunk, and he was always the town drunk. And he came to my dad to, a lot of people came to my dad to talk to him, and he said, you know, it's time that you go to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's helped my daughter. Maybe it'll help you. You're an alcoholic. It's not Mary's fault. And gave him the book. I don't know this. After my dad is gone, my mother tells me this. I am speaking in Thousand Oaks, which is about 2 hours north of here, one rainy night, and I didn't want to go, and I was tired, and the traffic was horrible, but I showed up. And I said this story because my mother had just maybe told me that a week or two prior, and it was kind of on my heart. And after the meeting, this girl comes up to me, and she said, hi, can I talk to you? And I said, yeah, you look familiar. And so she told me who she was. I went, oh, my God, I used to babysit you in Lisbon, Iowa. And I smoked a lot of pot. Are you okay? And I was like, here we go, more amends again. Eyes and ears open. And she said, yeah, I'm fine. She said, I just want to tell you, you told that story about my Uncle John. And he's still sober. And I went home 2 years ago to a family reunion, and my Uncle John 12-stepped me, and I have 2 years. So every once in a while, you get to see the ripple hit the shore. So it's just like a big hug from my dad that night. So Casey and I were together a long time, and I'm going to finish up with him. My dad got to meet him. I'm so glad, because he was a man's man, and the good handshake and all of that. And he was smart and funny. But we didn't live together for a long time because we weren't married. And my son was going to this school, where I wanted to give him some good ethics for life. Plus, I sent him home to Grandpa and Grandma every summer in Iowa, so he learned how to weed and, you know, drive a tractor and ride a horse and swim. And, yeah, he got a lot of good ethics by living with Grandma and Grandpa for a month every summer, too. But there he is. And, oh, I want to tell you about the carnival. The carnival. They have a carnival every spring at Sister Sheila's school. And guess who worked that carnival for 8 years to pay back all those kids I ripped off, all that awful stuff I did. I'll never be able to find those people, but it was on my list. And if it's on your list, the universe will give it to you one way or another. And I got to work that carnival and make money and buy ride tickets. And 8 years, I felt like it's done. So that was a beautiful moment to know that that's done. But if I'm ever in Louisiana, Arkansas, Missouri, I always say, look, if some old, like, lady, some drunken lady at the shooting gallery wouldn't give you your teddy bear when you really won, I'll take you out and buy you one, because you never know. But Casey, my husband, we got married. My son walked me down the aisle. We were married 5 years before he passed away. And that's when we lived together. That's when we found the place together. That's when we became a family. And you know, he had malignant melanoma. They said we had 7 months. We got 2 years and 2 months. And my husband was a brave man, and we got to travel, and I cashed out some money, and we went places. And he could play golf. That's what he loved doing. And I got to hold him on his last day, and my son wrote a note on the door with everybody coming to say goodbye. It said, bring only love. And that's what you do to me when I come be with you. You bring only love to me. Because I know if we're sitting here, we have been saved from a deadly disease. A deadly disease, and we have a common solution. and I got to hold my mother on her last days. She went out to polka music. My dad was Czech, and she was in hospice 2.5 days. My husband was in hospice 2.5 days. I hope I get 2.5 days if that time ever comes for me. And I was my mother's favorite. And she's forever in my heart, and she has taught me so much about being a kind woman. And I want to honor her today on Mother's Day because I am her daughter. Sober, I am her daughter. I used to think freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. And I got to tell you, there was no freedom when I came to you with my broken spirit and my broken body and my broken soul. And you treated me like that prospector that finally finds the main vein of the mother load of gold. You treated me like that, and you taught me how to mine it for the rest of my life and give every piece away. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man. I need a minute. I'm going to allow anyone to unmute themselves. Thank you so much, Sharon.
Thanks, Sharon. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sharon.
Awesome. Just awesome.
Thank you.
That was fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you very much.
Hi, Karen.
Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you, Sharon.
Hey, thank you, guys. Thanks
thank
for being
you, Sharon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Hi, Molly.
All right, I'm going to take the meeting back. We'll give Sharon an opportunity to exhale and stretch. I think I need an opportunity to exhale and stretch. Let me get oriented here. Whew. The seventh tradition. You know what the seventh tradition is. You can see in your chat window, I've already put the links to the different organizations. Simple Actions isn't taking direct contributions, but maybe you'll contribute to the Tidewater Intergroup, AA.org, or AAVirginia.org, Area 71. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. So hopefully you guys are putting some questions in for our dear Sharon. And while you're doing that, I'm going to say that a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. I will take a couple of announcements. If you want to raise your blue hand, feel free to do that. All right, I don't see any, but I'll look again for any raised hands in a moment. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available after we close the meeting in the room. Please stick around. You may have come in alone, but you do not have to leave that way. All right, kids. Let's see. Okay, I only see a few questions, so don't be shy. Unless you just want the rest of the meeting to be things I want to know the answer to. Sharon, we got you back.
I'm here.
That was, I still haven't recovered, dear. Thank you so much.
Welcome.
Let's see. Amy asks, how many people do you usually sponsor at a time?
Oh, Amy, where are you? Well, I got to tell you, God's creative connections happening on this Zoom stuff has been amazing with people that are connecting with me, that I'm connecting with people in their area. It has been so beautiful. And my lineage is big. but I sponsor a lot of women. I'm 40, almost 45 years sober, hopefully this summer, right? So I sponsor a lot of women that are between 30 and 42. One right behind me at 44. She's on my heels. So these women are sponsoring people who are sponsoring people. So it makes life a lot easier. My newest one I got was 2 years, a couple years ago, and we've been through the steps. And she's long distance, but I see her at least twice a year. And I have a feeling sometimes, a tug about somebody, because I know I sponsor a lot, but I share the wealth. I really share the wealth, because it is so much better when people you sponsor start sponsoring people. They're nicer to you after that kind of starts. But I always learn something. I always learn something. And we have call times. That works. So we're organized, and we're responsible, and we're accountable. And that's what works in my life. I have to be accountable back. It's my responsibility, if I'm your sponsor, that I give you the best that I got. And if it's not what I got and need, then we'll go somewhere else. So it's a huge worldwide fellowship, and nobody ever needs to be without somebody having the exact same experience. I had a girl 3 weeks ago, her son killed himself in another state. So she had to go with her husband and meet her daughter there and get everything and bring it back to Alaska. And then they were quarantined for 15 days. But 3 months before that, a woman I sponsor back east, her son, 40, killed himself. And that woman, when she called me, the first thing she told me what happened. And the second thing she said to me is, "Sharon, I want to walk through this and be an example to others." That was the second thing she thought of. So when this happened to my girl in Alaska, guess who called who? And there was a beautiful experiential connection that it was there immediately. And that's just like what? Just a piece of foam on the big hot chocolate of life, you know? I mean, I don't know how to explain it. But we have whatever we need here if we ask. You have to ask sometimes. But yeah, you can, if you're sponsored by me, I can hear it in your voice or see it in your eyes. We know each other pretty well. Doesn't matter where you are. And with the FaceTime and airplanes when they come back. But the Zoom is bringing so much camaraderie together. I'm amazed.
All right.
A lot of segue for you, Amy. There you go.
Would you ever fire your sponsor or disconnect in some way? Not everybody likes the term fire.
My first sponsor kind of got away from AA at 5 years, went to school, and that became a priority. And I, believe me, that started at about 3 years, and I hung in there for 2 years with her, and I just wasn't going. And then I thought if I'm supposed to have one, I was praying. And at a women's stag, somebody said something, this woman that had just come back to the group from another state, and she's like, "Oh, talk to me." I mean, that's her. And she was my sponsor for 5 years. And she's the one that when I went to pick her up to wish her a happy 21 years, she'd been in Paris working on a play for a year. I picked her up, and somebody that was also sponsored by her standing next to me, I had my baby in the stroller, said, "You know, Ginny's got 21 days. And I said, no, she's got 21 years. It's her 21st birthday. And she said, "No, she has 21 days. Ooh. So there wasn't any firing. It just happened like that. And that's, she
all right.
Came back and she ended up with 11 years before she died sober. So I was happy for that.
In keeping with the sponsorship theme, somebody says, "What does sponsoring people mean to your sobriety?"
Well, it means I'm going to be inconvenienced a lot, which is okay. It means, what does it mean? I mean, it means so much. It's like, it's on my plate of food. It's like one of my food groups. So if it's not on the plate, I started sponsoring very early. A lady that stabbed her husband was the first one that asked me. And so I was giving her direction, and I'm very new at this, and she's older than me, and I'm turning around to get a coffee cup out of the cupboard to give her a cup of coffee, and I think, okay, here comes the knife between, just hang on, it's coming in my back now. I mean, I was scared of her. And she wouldn't call me. But so then she started, I said, you have to call me. I would talk to her in front of people. I was scared of her. So she would call me after the coffee shop at midnight every night. I'd answer the phone. She'd say, hi, it's me. She never said her name. That's going to be my new blog. Hi, it's me. And she said, you know, she just said, I'm leaving the coffee shop. I had a good day. I'll see you tomorrow. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Okay. Good night. And that's the best she could do. And she stayed sober. She stayed sober through that horrible fire up at Paradise. She lost everything. And she stayed sober. And I don't sponsor her anymore, but she calls me every birthday. So sponsorship means I got a hand here, I got a hand there. I don't know. I just love alcoholics. I love you guys. I had to learn how to carry it out in the world because I didn't want to treat them like I treated you. I just didn't think they deserved it until I got that Chuck C thing that everybody gets a shot, right? Everybody gets grace, right? Oh, okay, that's right. But I don't know how to answer that other than it's a state. I would miss it. It means I learn so much. I learn so much. I'm still in the teachable. I hope I'm always humbled to learn so much. I hope I'm always there because I'm a seeker. And if I stop seeking, then I'll look for something else. Because Bill says we can put our head in the clouds as long as our feet are firmly planted. That's where our work is to be done.
Ah, thank you. Another member asks, how have you found serenity after traumatizing events?
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Well, I had that pretty traumatic event to get me here. And I had to sit in the courtroom with my wired jaw and look at parts of my body that were either bleeding, broken, or scraped open. You know, it wasn't, I was still numb. And we have, Chuck and Johnny used to have at the Riviera Country Club in Palm Springs, they used to have the Palm Springs Roundup every June. And we went that year, the first year. And I went to dinner with a bunch of AAs, and in the restaurant was my detective. So I'm going, you know, and then we drove by where they had said, where they had driven me by and said, this is where it happened because it had a very interesting fence. We drove by that place and I went, and I'm there for an AA conference, but these things are coming back. And I'm having a hard time one night and I go to hug this girl in our group and she said, oh, I have a sunburn, leave me alone. So there's a liquor store. I can see it out the back door, this convention center across the street. And I am on my way out there. And I got to tell you the backstory. This lady came in 8 days after me and had all my clout, like I had clout, like anybody could even talk to me. She took all my thunder with the old timers, 8 days behind me. And she had been, oh, Pat did her amends. And oh, Pat did her four step. I know you haven't even started yours. You know, it was like horrible things. I just thought, oh, Pat. But I have those 8 days on her, right? So I am going out the back door and this guy standing by the back door saw me and kind of grabbed me. You always have somebody watching people in the room. And it was a guy named Duke Gallagher, who's, I think he's in the big meeting in the sky, but he says, Sharon, what's going on? I said, I'm going to get a drink and blah, blah, and that lady and this and that. Cause all my trauma was coming out then. And he said, oh, okay, go over there, go get your drink and buy your bottle. And then you'll have less time than Pat. So, you know, and then I was married to Al, and I were together for a long time, and he was a good man. And he helped me through some trauma that I would have being intimate and that kind of thing. And he was very good about it. I really have a separation from that because she's, I see a picture of her, and she's where alcohol took me. I know her, but I don't know her anymore. I know her, I'm not her anymore. It's amazing. And then I was actually being mugged and running away from the muggers one night in the dark. And I'm thinking, I was maybe 2 years sober. I don't want to go through this again. I'm thinking they're going to hurt me and all that. And I heard a voice. I'm just saying, God, please, I don't know what to do. I'm just running, and he's right behind me. And I heard this voice said, just stop and give him your purse. So that's what I did, and that's all he wanted. So I think that, you know, I'm not saying that I didn't need extra help. I had everything I needed when I needed it. And, you know, I've been able to help other people with this too. So that, I think, helps when you can help somebody else with the experience that they need help with.
Well, you have another question. What would you say to the person who is unsuccessful at sponsorship because I'm 0-7?
That's a good start.
Got to kill a few, right?
Yeah, well, you know, one will stick, and then two will stick, and then one will go. And then you'll be down to one again, and then two will stick, and one more will come, and then one will go. It's just, oh, my God, don't give up. I mean, and I have people that don't sponsor people, too, because of various other reasons. One is very ill and really doesn't have the energy. But she calls people all the time. She calls people all the time. She talks to people all the time. She tries to be of service to them in any way. Physically, she can't, but she can talk to people and she can be on the phone for them or stay up late or, you know, and adopt a baby. Go adopt a baby. We call them babies. I don't know what you call them here, but we call them babies. Go adopt a baby. You can take them for coffee. You can, you know, take them to their mother's house when they're taking her mother flowers for the first time or something and sit in the car. You know, we can be useful and of service. And, I didn't come in here wanting to do anything. And I'm just wake up every morning and I used to ask, okay, God, what do you want me to do? But now it's, okay, God, how do you want me to be? So just be one of God's kids helping God's kids. And it could be your neighbor, just somebody that needs help and that isn't an AA, but they get help too. they get my Instant Pot cooking too. I discovered that in this whole thing is cooking in my Instant Pot, feeding the neighbors.
Thank you. Let's see. A member says that you've had the same home group for decades. What does a home group mean to sobriety?
Exactly what home is. I mean, I didn't have a home. I mean, I had my Iowa home, which wasn't my home. It didn't feel like it. And I didn't have I had my street home. I had my backpack. And when people used to say, welcome home, I go, that's not home. This isn't home. It took me a long time. And then God bless my husband. Before I knew him, he spoke once and he said, he didn't like when people, because he slipped a lot in the beginning. He said when people would say, welcome home, and you know, he's kind of an intellect, so that was his trouble for a while. But he said he went and looked up a poem from Robert Frost where it says, home is when you have to go there, they have to take you in. And that's what it is. I mean, a home group is someplace I have a commitment. A home group is someplace you know where I'm going to be. I don't miss my home group unless I'm traveling. I don't miss my home group unless I have a fever. My sponsor wouldn't let me miss a meeting unless I actually had a thermometer and had a fever. So, but yeah, my home group is where, when I went through that bad divorce, people knew I was having trouble. People knew I didn't have a job. People knew I had a new baby. They would show up at my door and say, hey, we're going to go to the movies and then go to a meeting. Come on. My mailbox, I got, people knew, the group knew. I got a bill in my mailbox, that my slot that just said to the Barker Baby Christmas Fund. That was my name before I was Crane. I was Barker. And it wasn't signed, of course. People put, you know, cards, gas cards and things in my purse. And I've been able to do that for other people. My favorite thing to do is to buy groceries and ring a doorbell. I mean, that home group is, you know, it's consistency. And we have traditions that I grew up in a small town. I understand community. And I understand that, you know, everybody's an alcoholic in there. The first time I spilled coffee on Clint Hodges, if you knew him, he was a great man too, big meeting in the sky. He yelled at me. And I just thought, well, he's an old timer. He's not supposed to be yelling at me. And I spilled coffee on him. So I was the cookie girl at this meeting that he used to like to come to, and he liked Fig Newtons. And so I decided, I think we're going to just run out of money before I get to the Fig Newtons when I'm buying the cookies next week. and maybe the week after that, and maybe the week after that. And Clint said to me, Sharon, I don't see any Fig Newtons lately. And I went, I don't know, Clint, they just seem to be out. It's a run on Fig Newtons, you know? But later on, Clint and I got to be pretty good friends. We used to laugh about that. So, I mean, we have history. We can sit in a room and talk about things, and things that were tragic had a silver lining. Things that were, we didn't know how that person was going to make it through that. And then we have people that we love that would go out and die. And it would make us closer. So there's, it's a small community. It's a community where if you're hurting, I'm hurting. And please, for me, I say this to my girls too, our meeting is so big that we get in these little clusters talking about how's your day, how's your week, I haven't seen you. And then there's people coming in that you don't even know to welcome and shake their hands. So I broke that up a while ago because my friend from Montana said, what happened, Sharon? Nobody came and welcomed us. It was like, wow. So yeah, you're there, and I'm in my seat every Wednesday on that big home group meeting, and I'm still cookie maven. They forgave me. I'm in the kitchen doing the cookies before the meeting. So it's a lot. Home group is like, it's my home. They had to take me in, and I'm there.
Beautiful. Let's see. I'm going to combine two questions we're about at the end of our time. You've been so generous, and it's just been so lovely to have you. And so one part A is, what does growth look like at this stage of sobriety and life? And part B, maybe I'm thinking this is related, has your heart healed or just got bigger?
Well, there's been a lot of growth in the last 3 years, and that's good. I think if you're bored, you're boring. There's a lot to do. I have never been bored, but I've been in pain. I have never been bored with life, but I've been, discontent. I've been disappointed, and I discovered a huge part about me in the last few years is that my biggest taproot defect of character is defiance. Self-reliance goes along with it, with defiance. And that is my contempt, Herbert Spencer, contempt prior to investigation. That is what keeps me from seeing what's necessary for me to grow. And 30 years in the legal field, they let me go because maybe ageism. It's happening to a lot of people in corporate America. It's happening to a lot of people at a certain age. Moving the department to another state, buying you out. Bye-bye. Thank you. Which was fabulous. I got 2.5 hours of sitting on the freeway back in my day every day. I was happy about it, but I wasn't ready. And I went in pretty deep and dark. I would get up and take my phone calls, do what I had to do, and go back to bed. That was 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago. And I was having a really hard time figuring out what to do next for a career to make money because, what I had was running out. And I have a mortgage and all that. So I was like, it's just me, It's just me. And I had Clancy for 5 minutes at a meeting, and I went over it with him it was last year. I went over a few things. We sat together at the meeting, and he just looked at me and said, Sharon, it's because you're defiant. Give it up. And it was like, oh, yeah. And I had to start with the action, with some humility, to just, I'll do anything. I'll do anything. And 5 minutes to midnight, God slid the perfect job for me under the door, part-time. Part-time, very little traffic. Can live off it, and my retirement I'm taking now, happily. But I just wouldn't budge. I mean, I had stupid things like, well, if I jump off my balcony, I'll just break my neck. And those girls will put me somewhere where I have to listen to them whine all the time. And all I can do is blink my eyes. And I tried to put a sense of humor, but I was feeling pretty dark. And yes, my broken open heart, every time it breaks open, it heals bigger. But it's got those little threads of love that they're very light, those threads that heal your heart. And if it pulls hard enough, there gets to be another hole, but it lets the light come in. It lets the light of healing come in. And I need that from all of you. Even though I can't hold your hand for the prayer or give you a hug, and I can see your eyes and I can feel the love, and what a miracle. That's what my broken open heart gives me, is more of you.
Well, thank you so much. I'm going to allow everyone the opportunity to unmute if they would like, and just say thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. My heart.
Woo-hoo! Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Harmony is my sponsor.
Harmony, I know Harmony. Oh, my goodness.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, I love you.
You're a beautiful lady.
The God in me sees the God in you, and the God in you sees the God in me. That's what it's about, right?
Yep.
Thank you, Sharon. God bless you.
Thank you. My mom thanks you. My mom would always say, when people left, she would say, may God be with you. She always said that when people left there in her later years. May God be with you. May God be with
you. Happy Mother's Day to you as well.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, David.
Happy thank Mother's Day, everybody.
I'm wearing her pearls. They're her
ladies here. Even the ones that don't have kids but have pets, happy Mother's
Day.
Absolutely. Y'all are moms.
I have a jib jab I'm sending out to people that only have pets from my dog dancing. So, because fur babies are very important.
Yes.
Very important.
All right, I'm going to take the meeting back just for a moment, and I'm going to try to share my screen. I believe Melissa is going to read the last three paragraphs on page 164.
Thanks, David. Thank you, Sharon. That was incredible. Harmony is my sponsor, too. She's got a lot of us running around here, so it was really great to hear you. Okay, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, Melissa. And I think that is a wrap. Let me just confirm with my format. And yes, I'm going to once again allow people to unmute if they wish. And let's virtually circle up and have a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Lord's Prayer. And if you're new and you need to connect with somebody, please don't run out right after the meeting. Our Father,
Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread,
and forgive us our trespasses,
as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Amen.